We'd like to
Log
welcome
Talk Radio.
Africa on the Move. We greet you with the words, claim no easy victory and tell no lies. Tonight we're going to be discussing the question that Marvin Gaye asked us years ago. What's going on? But before we do that, I'd like to read the first chapter of a book called The Pan-African Connection by Tony Mudd. And I think put everything in historical perspective, in which I will have my guest tonight, Brother Haki Bambushi, to discuss it from the perspective. He started on chapter one, the Caribbean and African historical perspective. He said over 50 years ago, in the 1920s, the famous Afro-American poet, Curtin Collins, pondered his position as an African in the West. Here, he was 300 years removed from his African homeland, and yet the remembrance of that continent pulsated in his being. As he wrote, he could yet feel the throbs of the drums in his brain. Africa for him was a very personal, a very close thing after 300 years. And he wrote a poem about it, a poem which he called Heritage. If he had written it in the 1980s, he might have called it Roots. But he called it Heritage. The same thing, here's how Curtin Collins began that poem. What is Africa to me? Copper sun or scarlet sea? Jungle style or jungle track? Scrum bronze men or regal black? Women from whose lines I sprung? When the birds are eating sung. 13 centuries removed from the scene his father loved. Spicy grove, cinnamon tree, what is Africa to me? This question, what is Africa to me, is a question which has dominated the history of African people in the Western world ever since we were first forcefully uprooted from our ancestral home. And herein lies what seems to me to be a central paradox in the history of our people in the Caribbean and, well, as I would like to add, in the West. Far on one hand, the remembrance of Africa has dominated our being, our very existence. We have never forgotten Africa, and yet at the same time, the powers that have never felt comfortable with this remembrance. Throughout our history, there has been a conflict at times, a muted conflict at times, an out violent conflict between those who resemble Africa and those who will suppress that memory. I'll stop right there, and I'll bring in my guest, Brother Haki and Brother Bambushi. I'd like to welcome you all to Africa on the Move.
Thank you very much. Good evening to your audience.
Brother Lee, thank you for having me.
In terms of that brief introduction I read, What is Africa by Curtin Collins, I'd like to ask you a question. In the year 2012, what is Africa to you? Starting with Brother Haki, then Brother Bambushi.
Africa to me? Well, Africa to me, in essence, is the cradle of civilization. When I think about science, when I think about mathematics, when I think about government, when I think about contributions to humanity in general, I think about Africa. So to me, Africa is the epitome of the cradle of civilization.
Brother Bambushi? What is Africa to you?
I would agree 100% with Brother Haki. I would just add that it's also our home and it's our mother.
Now, when you talk about the home and looking at the poem by Curtin Collins, he said that ever since our inception coming to the West, Africans have never forgotten about Africa as being their home. But we do know over a time and period there have been different perceptions of this concept of what is home. Today, when we talk about Africa as our home, can you put that in a proper political perspective, Brother Bambushi, for you?
Well, what we mean precisely is that Africa, the continent, not Africa, the country, according to George Bush, but Africa, the continent, is a place of immense riches. It's a place from which we were ripped, and it's a place that has never abandon us, and it's a place we should also never abandon. Unfortunately, we both share the same history, and we share the same problems today. Amongst those problems, primary is the problem of division or lack of unification. And so, to resolve this problem as a people, we have to become organized, push for a United States of Africa.
But Brother Haki, in terms of this conception of the connection between Africans who were displaced from Africa, who now live all throughout the world, and look at the African back home, why is it important for us to maintain connection to Africa as it relates to our survival in the future? Or does it? What's your perspective on that?
No, I think it's very germane, or very relevant that we maintain sight of the reality in terms of our commonalities. I think one of the things I allude to the origin of human beings and Africa being a home of all human beings, it's very, very important to understand that in that context that there are essentially two competing forces in the world, the humanitarian forces versus the anti-humanitarian forces. And so Africa has always been in the front in terms of pushing forward humanitarian attributes and values as it relates to human existence. And so in propagating those human values, it's the only way we're going to be even positioned to actually prevail in our fight against injustice, suffering, and poverty that exists around the world. Africa is the key. And so, but it's important that we all understand in terms of working together. I don't think that division will be of any relevance in terms of being able to bring us together. It's only by working together can we begin to actually change things. And we have to understand that with Africa as the homeland, a constant attack, not only by the United States per se, but the Western world generally. And so, therefore, it's incumbent upon all of us, the African people, to work together to fight in one direction for the good of all of humanity.
Man, Brother Bamboshi, Brother Haki raised the issue of it's important for us to fight together as African people throughout the world. How do we do that, given the fact that we have different conceptions and perceptions of who we are as a people at this point in time? Where do we start in order to make that a reality? And not so much as a myth that a lot of people say.
Well, I think Brother Haki also said that it is under attack. And that's true in so many ways. It's under attack militarily from forces of AFRICOM, from the forces of NATO, from the forces of the ex-colonial powers who were rapidly trying to recolonize Africa for its resources. So it is under attack. And he is also correct when he says that Africa has to fight. It has no choice. And we as Africans, wherever we might be in the world, we have to throw our lot in with Africa. Otherwise, we'll be lost.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this whole concept. Many times when we talk about Africa and Africa unity, there's a concept we call Pan-Africanism. I know that today different people have a different conception of Pan-Africanism. Brother Haki, how do you conceptualize this concept of Pan-Africanism?
Well, I think Pan-Africanism is the key in terms of bringing about the kind of change we hope to see, you know, throughout the world. Africa not only possesses the raw resources that Brother Bamboshi alludes to, but it also has the human capital in terms of bringing this change about. So I think that as this African consciousness permeates the world, I think that once we understand that we're descendants of some very noble, very ancient, and very noble people, I think it serves as a basis in terms of being able to actually to work together, to transcend class, to begin to understand that if we don't work together, then in essence that we're all in trouble. I think as time goes by, I think the consciousness around globally is beginning to increase, and there is a sharp awareness, I think, among many Africans throughout the world that we are one people, that in order to save humanity that we must work together. So I think Pan-Africanism is key in terms of that whole consciousness.
Brother Van Bush, you can give the people a basic definition, working definition, from your understanding what is Pan-Africanism. Give us, at least conceptualize, a basic working definition of what is Pan-Africanism. And that's, we're going to talk about it a little bit as it relates to our daily lives of Africans throughout the world.
My definition is the exact same definition as the first president of Ghana, Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. And Nkrumah says that Pan-Africanism is the total liberation and unification of Africa on an all-African socialist government. He said it's an objective which, when we achieve it, will bring about the fulfillment of the aspirations of Africans everywhere, not just in Africa. So, for me, this is the clearest definition that I have seen of Pan-Africanism. Ultimately, it means that, one, all of these many states that exist in Africa today, that was created at the Berlin Conference in 1885 in Berlin, where Europeans divided the continent up amongst themselves. All of these little boundaries must be dissolved, and Africa must become one continent in which the resources of Africa goes towards the betterment of the Africans in Africa and in the diaspora. I think that the struggle that is evolving in Africa today is a struggle for resources by the European powers mainly, and that we can see almost everywhere on the continent. The struggle over countries that are producing oil, the struggle over countries that are producing components that are used in cell phones, things like coltrane that comes from the Congo. The struggle to rid Africa of any resemblance of independence. The struggle over, for example, removing from Africa any country that is not tied to the Rockefeller banking industry, such as Libya. I think that when you look at these kind of struggles, and we must take heart and see exactly how they are falling into place, but also how they are failing. Today in Libya, the U.S. Embassy was attacked, and one of the diplomats was murdered, I understand, by the same rats that the U.S. imposed on the Libyan people last year. So changes have taken place. Changes are going forward faster than anybody can imagine, and it takes a keen eye to analyze these changes and realize what the contradictions are and where these changes are taking us.
Okay, Brother Aki, in terms of this question of when we talk about African unity, I notice being among many Africans, and not saying all, but many Africans today, particularly, let's say, in the U.S. and in the West, because of their strong propaganda making Africans think they are something other than what they are, there seem to be a slippage of, in terms of having this proudness of being African and knowing they are African. We went from the Black Power movement and began to connect back with Africa, but today it seems like we're going backward in reverse. What do you contribute to that, and what needs to be done to particularly the youth today to get them to realize they are Africans?
Yeah, well, you know, we can't underestimate the power of propaganda and disinformation. You know, when we look at the school system in terms of, you know, how it's constructed, one of the things we got to be realistic about, we can't realistically expect the oppressors to adequately teach your history. It would be naive to assume so. And what, unfortunately, what's happening is that as we become socialized, conditioned to believe in this notion that somehow that we're alien to Africa, that Africa has a relationship to our own lives, that we embrace the kind of disinformation that is antithetical to our own existence. And so we internalize all the worst in terms of what it is as comparison. if the struggle in the minds of our people to be more European-like or to be more civilized, for lack of a better term, then what does that say in terms of African sales? It doesn't bode well in terms of understanding us or appreciating African sales. So the issue is one of education. Now, having said that, one of the things I think we got to be very, very clear on is that to some extent we have to play a part in terms of you know, our lack of enthusiasm as adults in the community in terms of pushing African values and African culture or identifying with Africa. I think, unfortunately, because ignorance that exists among so many adults, it makes it that much more easier for those musicians of power to manipulate public sentiment or manipulate the way people feel about themselves by elevating the most ignorant among us. In the process, it gives credibility and legitimacy to this notion that, in fact, that, you know, Africa is esoteric, that its existence is unimportant. All you have to do is be proud and be in America. Here today in America, they have these so-called 9/11 discussions. It was particularly sad when I listened to, you know, African radio and these people are talking about, you know, the kind of damage, quote-unquote, the terrorists inflicted upon America. It makes me sad because I realize that they have internalized, you know, the worst kind of propaganda. Well, actually taking the time or the opportunity to actually to look into 9/11 to understand the intricacies involved, they internalize this nonsense in terms of this alien forces actually coming to America in American attacking America, in the process of attacking America, attacking African people. So I think on one hand that we have to understand that this information that we receive in terms of 9/11 has no basis in truth. In fact, this notion that Bin Laden was responsible for 9/11 is a bogus one. And if you look deep enough, then you understand the role or the complicity played by the CIA intelligence communities in America. And despite the efforts of those in power to sort of dismiss or downplay, you know, information that's out there in terms of what really transpired, they have been very, very successful in reaching people and inculcating people's notion that, in fact, others have attacked us. And so as we, as a people, identify so strong with America that we fail to even appreciate our own oppression. And so, therefore, anytime, particularly when it is related to our youth, anytime our youth are in trouble, our people don't see it necessarily as institutions adverse impact on the psyche of our kids. They start to see our kids as being bad kids. And so it has all kind of repercussions in terms of, you know, for our survival. But the struggle for us, you know, for those of us who are conscious, those of us who understand the world in which we live in, we just have to retrench, you know, dig in our heels and try to, and we can in terms of bring this out. It's going to be a long, long struggle. Right now, there's a great clamoring for public education. As the Bush and Powell will continue to cut education, on the one hand, education may be cut, but on the other hand, what it does is it creates a greater desire for that education. And that education received doesn't do anything in terms of really empowering African children. So, having said that, the struggle for us is to create, as always been, is to create institutions of learning for our children to make sure that they get the proper message.
Earlier to Brother Bamboshi, you mentioned the question of you take your definition of Pan-Africanism from the first president of Ghana, Dr. Osekefo Kwame Nkrumah. I'd like to preface this question to you first, Bamboshi, and Brother Hake, you respond afterwards. Nkrumah, if I believe correctly, stated that the highest expression of black power is Pan-Africanism. If that is the highest expression of black power, what does it mean today for Africans in the West, who have now created conditions to allow an African in this country named Barack Obama to become president of the United States? Is this an expression of black power that Brother Kwame Ture and Nkrumah were speaking about? If not, how do you view that? How do you explain that in that relationship of power to the historical development of the African people?
We should also go back to look at Kwame Nkrumah, because Kwame Nkrumah wrote a book. The name of the book was Neocolonialism, The Last Stages of Imperialism. In this book, he explains how the system of neocolonialism works. In essence, he says that the neocolonial agent is one who takes the place of the colonialists and does the work of the colonialists for the colonialists. In essence, the neocolonial agent runs his country, not for himself or his people, but for those colonial forces who once controlled Africa. Now, taking that a step further, neocolonialism exists all over the world. Of course, it would be clear to say that neocolonialism also exists inside the United States. We have a problem because today folks says we have to choose the lesser of the two evils. I don't think that's setting the correct parameters for our struggle, because we've always done that. We've always used the lesser of the two evil, and so far that strategy has gotten us nowhere. So today we have to say that we have to call neocolonialism what it is. And we have to understand that neocolonialism is an enemy of our people and our struggle. It's an enemy to Pan-Africanism. It's an enemy towards any attempt at African unity and the unity of the African diaspora. So it becomes part of our struggle, especially today, where our struggle must be to interpret ideas and give the ideas back to the people for us to understand neocolonialism and be able to explain it correctly to the people so that they can also understand it and make proper and appropriate choices.
Okay. Brother Haki, before you respond to it, I'd just like to welcome my guests and my audience that you are listening to Africa on the Move. We have a dialogue with Brother Haki and Brother Bamboshi. I'm Brother African on African on the Move, and we are talking today what Africa means to us. We started out earlier giving a backdrop by Kathleen Cullins on what Africa meant to him. So you can feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. Brother Haki, as we were saying, what does this expression of having an African being elected president of the United States government mean to you when you talk about this concept of black power and Pan-Africanism?
Well, I think the election of this African man, or this black man, for lack of a better term, is of no real consequences to the aspirations and concerns about African people. I think first and foremost, people have to understand that Barack Obama, like all presidents, is vetted. And so therefore, the power structure know precisely exactly what kind of individual they're getting. If you think back prior to his run for the president of the United States, they took him over to Europe, and they had all of these people coming out, you know, expressing their love for Barack Obama. Now, that was calculated. It was by design. In other words, Barack Obama, by taking him to Europe and giving it, quote-unquote, by creating the perception that this guy is well loved by white folks, it was sending a message back into America that this guy is acceptable, he's palatable, so white America, come on, vote for him, because he's our kind of man. And indeed, when you look at Barack Obama's policies, clearly he's their kind of man. One of the things that's particularly puzzling is that when you look at the criminality of people like George Bush, former President George Bush, and Dick Cheney, and Wolfowitz, and a whole litany of criminals. When you look at the kind of crimes that they exact, and even after those crimes were documented in books, journals, in public discourse, even though those crimes articulated, Barack Obama's position was that there would be no pursuit of these individuals in terms of criminal charges. Now, the question is, now, wait a minute, if in fact you represent democracy, then there's a fundamental conflict in terms of what you propose to be about and what you're actually doing. Democracy, as in the sense that they understand democracy, cannot exist if you have one standard for one group and another standard for another group. So clearly this man sees himself, and in history of this out, but this man sees himself as part of the establishment. You know, so I think that it's just in terms of you know, our aspirations, they cannot reside with Barack Obama. Aspirations have to be with strengthening of Africa and a worldwide move in terms of Africans understanding their place and understanding, you know, the kind of power that we will and trying to move into in a positive, humane way and to get the world to where we think the world should be in terms of, you know, human values. So I don't think anybody should be deceived that Barack Obama is never professed to be, you know, he never professed to be progressive. And also, having said that, you understand that this man, you know, in terms of the policies that he pursued, this man is a politician. By definition, they pontificate, they lie. That's what they do. They support the system. That's what they do. This man doesn't give a damn about the struggle, or he won't even articulate the struggling of African masses in this country or throughout the world. He won't do it. So this man is always been right wing. So I don't know why people think that somehow, because of the color of his skin, that he's going to somehow involve himself in terms of the aspirations and needs and desires of African people in this country or throughout the world. It's simply not going to happen. He's a politician. The man is not a revolutionary. He's a politician. And that's the thing we have to understand. So for all of us to move forward, it has to be a worldwide movement, and it has to be where Africa has to be the pinnacle of that movement in terms of really bringing about a humane society throughout the world.
Okay, to Brother Bamboshi and Brother Hackey, but to Brother Bamboshi, we got 3 minutes remaining. And for our listening audience and for those who will hear this particular program later on, I think one of the questions I would like you all to briefly address before we get off here, we have about 2.5 minutes, if you can do about it in a minute apiece. In reality, concretely speaking, how does the liberation of Africa will play out when it comes to dealing with the suffering that is inflicting our people throughout the world? For example, a brother right here in Washington, D.C., or a brother in Brazil, how will Africa really transcend his everyday life, politically and economically? Brother Bamboshi.
Well, I would have to say that in terms of human development, not in terms of GDP or any of these standards that are used to measure society by capitalism, but instead in terms of your health, your education, your quality of life, your rights to food, clothes, shelter, etc., is what we have to look at to see what would happen in a situation where we would have a United States of Africa and where the resources of Africa would go towards the development of African people. And I'm sure that there's no other way to look at it than to understand that in such a situation we would be much better off.
Brother Hackey, would you like to take a stab at it? Give me about 1 minute.
I think that Brother Bush is absolutely correct. It's necessarily not going to manifest itself in terms of GDP, you know, or export, import, or any of that kind of thing in terms of how capitalists, you know, define economics. I think it's going to be much more on the line of self-interest in terms of what Africa brings to the world in terms of the paradigm shift that we need in terms of bringing about humanity. And no longer will people be judged in terms of how much you have or how much money you have. Those kind of things will become esoteric. And more important, what becomes is, then, you know,
20 seconds of that,
those kind of things that are self-sustaining, those kind of things that add to life, that protects the earth. So I think those are things that would be very, very important to humankind.
Okay, we'd like to tell our audience, we'd like to thank tonight Brother Bamboshi Hackey for sharing our views on this idea of what Africa means to them As we stated earlier in the beginning of the program, we tell no lies and claim no easy victory. We thank you for watching Africa Speaks. I'm Africa on the Move.
We thank you.
We thank y'all.